Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Lavernier, bringing you an hour of comedy. Later on, the very eccentric Bob Burns on his own program from 1943. But right now, it's the Jimmy Durante Show from November 12th, 1947 on NBC.
Good health to all from Rexall. From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show. Yes, it's the Jimmy Durante Show with Arthur Treacher, Candy Candido, Roy Barbie and his orchestra, our Rexall sportscaster Tommy Harmon, yours truly, Howard Petrie, and our special guest tonight, Dorothy L'Amour. Brought to you by 10,000 Rexall drugstores who carry the complete line of top-quality Rexall drug products. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the man who just this week was chosen one of the 10 most eligible bachelors in the country, the one and only Jimmy Durante, in person.
Even when things go wrong,
he's so cute I could pinch him.
You feel better, you even look better. Stop the music, stop the music. What's going on here?
Mr. Randy, for you I'd even give up James Mason.
This girl could make a career out of cooling soup.
You know, you're eligible, and I'm eligible, too. Oh, I'm so happy I can sing. La, 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 la.
The turkeys are gathering early this year.
Schnoz, how exciting to think that you were picked as one of the country's most eligible bachelors. You mean to say in all these years you haven't even been engaged?
Well, Howard, I was engaged to a girl 12 years ago, but one day we had a lover's quarrel. Since then, she's been married 3 times and has 12 children.
Really?
Yeah, and if she keeps trying to make me jealous like that, I'm going to break our engagement. I hope she makes up her mind soon. The groom on the wedding cake I bought is wearing a rented tuxedo. Wait a minute. That last line didn't get as big a laugh as I thought it would. This must never happen again. Ushers, attention. Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I promise to laugh at all the jokes.
I promise to laugh at all the jokes.
And if I violate this pledge, I will be court-martialed. My shoulder pads will be ripped out.
My shoulder pads will be ripped out.
My flashlight broken over my knee.
My flashlight broken over my knee.
And I will be exiled to the bride and groom program.
And I will be...
The ushers dread that program, folks. They give away 150 iceboxes, and the ushers have to carry them out to the cars. That must be the long-distance call I tried to put through this morning. Hello, Durante speaking.
We're ready on your call to Washington, D.C. Kindly limit your call to 3 minutes. If you limit your call to 3 minutes, we can complete many more calls than we could if you just went on jabbering away for an unlimited amount of time. Here is your party in Washington.
Hello?
Hello, hello, hello. It's very cold here in Washington.
Very pretty, but would you mind putting your father on the phone, Margaret? And hurry, this is important.
Your time is up.
Operator, operator, operator. How do you like that? I pay $6 for a phone call, and what do I get? A floor showing a frost warning.
Say, Jimmy, why the excitement? What was this important matter you had to speak to the president about?
Well, you see, right after the program tonight, I'm leaving on the super cheap for the press photographer's ball. And Howard, I've booked an act that'll be a sensation of the year.
The sensation of the year, huh? Well, what is it, Jimmy?
Truman's going to play the piano for Mumble's Quartet. Harry makes good. There might be even an opening for him with the Andrews sisters. But aside from that, Howard, my real purpose in going to Washington is to inform the country what's wrong with it. Let me tell you about it. Everybody's trying to figure out what's wrong with the country. Well, I'm proud to say I've solved the case. Cause after dilly-dallying, shilly-sallying, I've reached a concussion. The state of Arkansas is in the wrong place. It's Van Buren's fault. When he was president, he mislaid it. Why nobody ever thought of it before, I'll never know. It's a simple little move, but what improvements it'll show. Move the state of Arkansas to Nebraska. Then move Nebraska to Idaho. Then move the state of Idaho to Alaska. And move Alaska to Ohio. It took a lot of time and brain work. See the wrinkles on my brow. Why, there's lots of little details, but I'm working on them now. Move Ohio to Nevada. It's as plain as ABC. Then we'll move Nevada, where our Kansas used to be. We'll have a better nation just by changing the location of the state of Arkansas. Let me show you what I mean. If you move Arkansas, you gotta move it someplace, right?
Right.
And if you move it someplace, you gotta move what was someplace to someplace else, right?
Right.
And if you move what was someplace else to someplace else, you gotta move what was someplace else to some other place else, right?
Right.
Wrong. I always admire a guy who speaks his mind. My plan is to move all the state to better places. Believe me, I'd take Nebraska and put it in Rhode Island. I'd take Minnesota and put it in Rhode Island. I'd take Montana and put it in Rhode Island. Poor little Rhode Island just split at the seams. After that, I'd move New Mexico to Texas. Texas to Pennsylvania. Then I'd take the state of Missouri and move it to... Don't get mad, Mr. Truman. I'll put it back. And then to add glamour to the national capital, I'd take Hollywood and move it to Washington, D.C. Why, I can just see the neon sign on the White House. Louis B. Mayer presents Congress. 96 gorgeous senators and Gene Autry and his horse. Jimmy Fiddler just gave it one bell. That makes it unanimous. We'll have a better nation just by changing the location of the state of Arkansas.
As you know, ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Durante is leaving tonight for Washington. As we look in on the Durante household now, we find Preacher checking Jimmy's trunk to see if he has packed everything.
Now, let me see. 4 sport shirts, 3 sweatshirts, 2 boiled shirts, 1 boiled potato, 1 hot water bottle filled, and enter.
I'm from the Acme Express Company. I come to pick up the Randy's trunk.
Have you any references?
References? Certainly. If you just call Miss Priscilla's finishing school for girls, you'll find I was voted the girl most likely to become a boy. Now, where's the trunk, buddy?
Oh, right here behind the screen. But if you're going to carry it through the house, I suggest that you put your undershirt back on.
That's a strange request, Jeeves. Why do you suggest it?
Well, we happen to have a picture of Whistler's mother. And if she gets a peek at the tattoo on your chest, it'll knock her right out of her rocker.
Hey, you father's Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, dear.
Well, Preacher, my boy, Washington is calling. I'll be gone for 6 days. And I do hope you won't be lonesome while I'm away.
Well, I must admit, sir, that I will be. You know, when you leave this house, sir, a little bit of warmth goes out with you.
It does?
Yes. You're taking the hot water bottle.
A logical deduction. But, Preacher, I've just learned that Dorothy L'Amour is going to be on the Super Chief with me. And it looks like I won't have time to go to the barber.
Oh, I have the lather already, sir. I can shave you.
Spoken like a true gentleman, a scholar and a barber.
Thank you, sir. May I say, sir, that the texture of your skin seems to be getting smoother and smoother every day.
Thanks to you and your faithful ministrations, Preacher, my good man. Tell me, what have you been using to massage my face lately?
All the same old thing, sir. Brillo.
It helps. It helps.
Now, hold still, sir. Hold still.
Ouch! Ouch! Preacher, I think that razor is a trifle dull.
Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. It's extremely sharp.
I retaliate. I think it's a trifle dull.
Well, it must be sharp, sir. You didn't have this dimple in your chin this morning.
Thanks for the improvement. Now when I eat celery in bed, I'll have a handy place to keep the salt. Oh, it's the cook. Matilda, my good woman. How would you like to prepare a little box lunch for me to take on the train? Some petit four, some petit de la foie gras.
Save your breath, pelican snoot. This is my day off.
Your day off? But, Matilda, you were off yesterday and the day before and the day before that.
Yeah? Which one are you, Taft or Hartley?
You know, I can't fire her because her slacks fit me perfectly. All right, Treacher, I'm on my way. Hand me that box. It's a little surprise for Doris L'Amour. A corsage of flowers.
Corsage? Don't you mean corsage, dear boy? A-G-E is pronounced Arge, you know. As in garage, massage. Tell me, old Kipper, where did you get the corsage?
From the man who comes to collect the gabot. Out of the way, creature. I'm off to meet Dorothy L'Amour. I think I'll just step into the club car here and see what's going on. Ah, my dreams have come true. There's Dorothy L'Amour. She looks just as pretty as she does in her new picture. A miracle can happen. Pardon me, Miss L'Amour, but some of my friends are your friends, and your friends are my friends. So as long as our friends are friends, why can't you and I be friends?
What is this, the super chief of the friendship train?
Dorothy L'Amour! Looking forward to seeing you on the train. Here, I even bought you a gift.
Why, Jimmy, imported sen-sen.
Yes. Yes. A carrier pigeon flies it in every day, piece by piece. Ah, Daddy, you're the most glamorous girl I know.
Oh, come now, Jimmy. After all, I'm nothing special. Why, I'm just like the girl next door. What was that?
10,000 men rushing next door. but I belong with you, Dottie. You know, I was just voted one of America's 10 most eligible bachelors. What a gay blade. The girls even call me Oldsmobile because of my high dramatic clutch.
Well, you don't frighten me, pretty puss. I know my way around romantic men. I was supposed to be the girl Charles Boyer falls in love with for in Arch of Triumph, but I refused.
What was wrong with being the girl Charles Boyer falls for in the Arch of Triumph? Lucky I got through that one. And I think you were lucky you got through yours.
And you're not kidding. Well, give me the line again.
What was wrong with being the girl Charles Boyer falls for in the Arch of Triumph?
Who wants to play a fallen arch? Duck, duck. I got a million of them, a million of them.
Everybody wants to get into the act. But speaking of pictures, Dottie, my picture this time for keeps is opening all over the country with Lawrence Melchior and Lawrence Melchior.
I saw that picture, Jimmy.
For saying that twice, I get a free Melchior. Should let me get that line in.
Well, I saw that picture, Jimmy. Esther Williams is in it, isn't she?
Oh, yes. And I love that Esther Williams in those swimming scenes. That girl brings out the salmon in me. Why, I'd go upstream with her anytime.
Well, what are you doing on this train, Jimmy?
Well, to tell the truth, I'm on my way to Washington for a few matters that needed to be washed up. They're going to present my nose in the... In the trial of Howard Hughes and his flying boat.
Well,
I did that on purpose.
How can they use your nose in the Howard Hughes hearing?
They claim if I can get the schnoz off the ground, what's Hughes waiting for? Thanks for laughing, folks. You're all my guests for dinner. Johnny Myers is picking up the check.
Oh, look, Jimmy. The train's going into a tunnel, and it's pitch dark.
This is my big chance. L'Amour and Durrani in a dark tunnel. I can't see you, but I'm going to sweep you into my arms and kiss you. There, my sweet. Even though we couldn't see each other, didn't that kiss mean the beginning of a wonderful romance?
You'll have to work fast. I get off at Albuquerque.
Daddy, there's only one thing that can settle my nerves after that horrifying experience. Sing something for me.
Well, I'd be glad to, Jimmy. How about the crew chiefs and I doing? Let's pick up where we left off.
Okay.
Let's pick up where we left off and start all over again. Can't we be the same old sweetheart, just like we were then? Let's pick up where we left off and start a new dream or two. I still get that same old feeling when I think of you. I walk in the park, all alone in the dark, to our favorite rendezvous. But when I get there, it's so empty and bare, nothing but memories. Chance, I'm yours till heaven knows when. So let's pick up where we left off and start all over again.
I walk in the park all alone in the dark to our favorite rendezvous.
It's wonderful riding the Super Chief with you.
It is a nice trip, Jimmy, but you aren't relaxing.
How can I relax? As soon as I get to Washington, I join the Hubble and the Bubble. And chaos, too. I'll be right in the middle of it with all those important men like General Marshall, Senator Vandenberg, Eric Johnson, and Maraschino Schwartz.
Maraschino Schwartz? What makes him so important in Washington?
He's the one who smears the mustard on Justice Frankfurter. He's the only judge who hands down his decisions in a bun.
Well, Jimmy, try and forget those things for a while. Come on, lay your head on my shoulder and try to take a little nap.
Thank you, Dottie. I could use a little snooze.
That's the boy. Now just close your eyes and go to sleep. That's right. Just sleep. It takes a snore a long time to go through his nose. My, his sweet face looks disturbed. I wonder what he's dreaming about.
What a life. The skelter and the helter of the busy city. The hubbubaloo of the roaring multitudes. I wish I could get away from it all. If I could only drift away to a desert island. Only me and Dorothy L'Amour.
Greetings, white man. Me Tondalea L'Amour. Oh, Noliso, Koma Ucha Labuchi, Koli Onka, Ola Manasui.
I don't know what that means, but in my neighborhood, we'd be married by now.
Oh, you beautiful white man. Me love strong shoulders and big muscles. How you get so much hair on your chest?
It used to be on my head, but I rotated my crop. You know, Dorothy, my new hair tonic is Figaro number 5.
Booga, booga, nala suna kunkala kuni.
Tell me, lovely princess, who is that native standing over there?
Him, you coconut dealer, the gibbering Javanese.
Egad, and I came to forget civilized ways. Do you have many of those guys here?
Oh, yes. We have Madman Manakura and Honest Haki.
Honest Haki? Yeah, and there's the sign of the biggest of them all. Sell your canoe to the poop Polynesian.
Oh, why we talk of silly things. Take me in your arms, oh handsome banana beak.
Please, what you've got is what I came here to forget. I don't want romance. I just want to relax and live on tropical fruits. Just this morning, I saw my first papaya.
Ah, it is a wonderful fruit, the papaya.
Not only that, I saw a papaya and a mamaya. The papaya said to the mamaya, when are we gonna have a papaya? And a mamaya said to the papaya, do you want a girl papaya, or a boy papaya? But they had twins. A girl papaya for the papaya, and a boy papaya for the mamaya. So now the papaya and the mamaya have a girl papaya for the mamaya and a boy papaya.
Goodness, how can white men say things like that?
White men have short education and long rehearsal.
To forget this city life, you must fall in love with Tondaleo, my wonderful shark snoot. Come, I will kiss you so hard, it will curl up your toes.
That's ridiculous. You couldn't kiss me hard enough to make my toes curl.
Oh, no? Watch. Hiya, Curly.
How do you like that? I now have open-toed feet.
There is only one way for you to completely forget the city. You shall marry me and live here on this island. Come. You must ask my mamacita for my hand.
That's the way you feel, Princess. I'll do it. Honorable Mama Chica, your daughter wants to marry me.
Ula naga, saga bumba kupa. Nula nula, mala mala. Salawaka, how could?
How could?
How could you be such a schmo?
But, Mamacita, he wants to get away from city life. You must let him stay in our jungle.
Well, don't you tell her how I feel.
I will, Mamacita. This is how white man feels. Bunga, 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 I don't want to leave the conga. Oh, no, 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 no.
My girls always say no.
Bingle, bangle, bungle, I'm so happy in the jungle, I refuse to go.
Calypso, don't want no bright lights, false teeth, doorbells, landlords. I made it clear
that no matter how they coax me, I'll stay right here.
Always waiting for Crosby and Hope.
Bunga, 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 I don't want to leave the conga.
Oh, no, 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 no. Who wrote this, Vazinski?
Bingle, bangle, bungle, I'm so happy in the jungle, I refuse to go.
Don't want no penthouse, bathtub, streetcars, taxis, noise in my ears.
So no matter how they coax me, I'll stay right here.
But if you come back to civilization, I'll give you a Cadillac.
Uh-uh.
I'll give you diamond rings.
No.
I'll give you mink coats.
No.
Better than that, I'll tell you who Miss Hush is.
Miss Hush? I'm with you, Jimmy. Civilization, here we come.
Zooks, I've been sleeping. Daddy and I had a wonderful dream resting on your shoulder. And I'm convinced that you and I were meant to be betrothed. Tell me, sweetheart, what do I have to do to make you my bride?
You'll have to work fast. I get off at Albuquerque.
Friends, here are those foremost Rexall reminders for the week. Remember, 25% of America buys its drug needs in Rexall drugstores. Remember, Rexall is that large and respected family of more than 2,000 different drug products. Remember, you can always depend on any drug product bearing the name Rexall. Remember, Rexall drug products are available in Rexall drugstores everywhere.
Touché, Howard, and I'd like to add, I do my shopping at a Rexall store, buying Rexall drugs, and furthermore, Umbriago, he prefers them too. We buy Rexall, that's all. How about you?
Rexall tonight, folks, from Arthur Treacher, Roy Barger, yours truly, Howard Petrie.
And Jimmy Durante, who says, good night, Peggy Lee, come back soon, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
This program was produced and directed by Bill Cohen. With help from all, subject all. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Jimmy Durante Show on Tuned to Yesterday from November 12, 1947 on NBC. Special guest movie actress Dorothy L'Amour was on the silver screen three times in that year alongside Alan Ladd in Wild Harvest, paired with Bob Hope in My Favorite Brunette, and in the fifth of seven road movies called The Road to Rio with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Next, comedy from the Arkansas Traveler himself, comedian Bob Burns. And his famous instrument, the bazooka, of which the gun was named after, is featured on this program next, first heard on NBC on May 20th, 1943.
As we've gone all out of meat, we're all out of coffee and all out of butter. But, you know, of course, it ain't so bad out here. We've still got things, but have you priced eggs lately? I'm telling you, I don't know what we're going to do if they get any higher. You know, the hens out at my house, they don't cackle anymore. It's a fact. When my hens lay an egg, they just chuckle. But that's just like me, though. I'm just like all the men folk, you know. We're worried about eating. That ain't the thing we shouldn't say anything about things we have to go without as far as food's concerned, because our boys are getting it. The people that I feel sorry for are the women that can't get stockings. Now, I'm telling you, my heart goes out to them. Because now, you take Aunt Peachy Sims. That's my old maid aunt down in Van Buren. She couldn't get a pair of stockings to save her life, so she tried that makeup, you know, them stockings that you paint on your leg. And, you know, after she painted them on her leg, the stockings had so many wrinkles in them, she had to have her knees lifted. But now, speaking of wrinkles, the most outstanding and the newest wrinkle in music circles is Spike Jones and his City Slickers. We're awfully proud today because we just learned that Spike Jones has won an important poll. He was crowned King of Corn by the Downbeat magazine. Now, in case there might be some doubting Thomases loose in the world, Spike's going to cinch his claim to that title right now by playing Hot Your Cornea. Go ahead, Spike.
Timber! Go down to the newspaper office and join Bob Burns, the Arkansas Traveler. The Traveler, you know, is the editor of the paper. He's just returned from lunch to find young Dewey Flagg holding down the editor's desk.
Hello, Dewey. I didn't see you at Pop's lunch wagon today.
I didn't eat yet. Anything new on Pop's menu?
Well, on the menu I had, there was a smear of mustard I hadn't seen before.
Did he have any meat today?
Well, yes, such as it is. Of course, he didn't have as much meat as he used to. But on the other hand, he seems to have more gravy. Someday, when I'm feeling up to the job, I'm going to investigate Pop's gravy.
Chris says Pop's gravy don't depend on the meat supply at all.
Well, personally, I think it's a byproduct of some of them new plastics they got out now. To me, Pop's gravy's one of life's greatest mysteries.
It's like Pop's hash. Only looser.
Well, not much looser. You ought to chew Pop's gravy pretty good before you swallow it. One fella in there today complained that he pulled out a filling on that gravy.
Pat Mitchell says he thinks Pop is serving horse meat now. You think he is?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Of course, a fella ate one of Pop's steak sandwich today, and he did act a little peculiar afterward. His truck was parked out at the curb, and instead of climbing into the seat, the fella stood in Pop's doorway and hollered, "Hi-ho, Silver!"
The truck couldn't hear him.
No, but some of Pop's meat pushed open the icebox and whinnied.
I'll take it. City desk, Flag speaking. Oh, it's for you, Traveler, Pat Mitchell.
Oh, hello. Yeah, Pat. Yes, I saw the note you left on my desk, but we can't use that story. I aim to run a newspaper, not a peep show. Sorry, but I'm killing that story. Goodbye.
Gee, Traveler, I'm surprised that Pat Mitchell's going in for that kind of a story. I didn't know he was one of those keyhole peeping reporters.
He ain't, Dewey. Pat's more of the transom type. You know, I guess Pat's going to be pretty sore at me for killing his story, but I'll tell you, Dewey, an editor's got to keep in mind that printed words can do a lot of harm as well as a lot of good.
Yes, sir. I know a story that'll do a lot of good.
You do, huh?
Yes, sir. About my scout troop needing uniforms. Look at it. I've got a picture here of my troop on a hike.
Mm-hmm. They do look kind of ragged in this rear view of them.
They look the same way from the front.
See, who's this boy at the end of the line here?
That's Jimmy Dolan. He's one of the fellas that don't have money for a uniform.
Yeah, I notice he's got a big white patch on the seat of his pants.
Well, that ain't exactly a patch. That's Jimmy.
Oh.
Yes, sir. And look at Satchel Pants Flynn. Oh, we call him that on account of he has to wear his big brother's clothes. He inherited that uniform from his brother, too.
You don't fill it out any too well, does he?
No, sir. That uniform is so big for him that when he comes to attention, the uniform stays at ease.
Well, Dewey, I'll run this picture, and you can write a story to go with it. We'll see if we can't get you some action.
Gosh, thanks.
Traveler, may I come in?
Sure, Julie. Come on in. Scram, Dewey.
Yes, sir. Traveler, I suppose this is none of my business, but I'm worried about something.
What's the trouble, Julie?
Well, is it true, Traveler, that this newspaper owes a lot of money to the Merchants Bank?
Oh, sure. As long as I was borrowing money from every other bank in town, I didn't want to slight the merchant.
Well, could the Merchants Bank foreclose or anything like that?
Well, I suppose it could make it tough when it comes time to renew our notes. Why?
Well, I had lunch today with Margie Hook. She's Mr. Welburn's confidential secretary.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Welburn, president of the Merchants Bank. The plot thickened. Go ahead, Julie.
Well, Margie seems to think that you've offended Mr. Welburn. And she said if she were in your boots, she wouldn't refuse to come up to the bank and see the man who could make or break you.
Well, now, I didn't refuse to see him. When Marge phoned, I told her that if Welburn wants to see me bad enough, he could come up here where I'm always on view.
Oh, Traveler, it isn't like you to stand on ceremony and be so, well, so stubborn.
Well, Margie riled me. Besides, I know what Welburn wants. And if I go to his office, it'd give him an idea he's going to get it.
He usually does get what he wants, Traveler. He's a very powerful man here in town.
Yep, but I'm the editor of a paper, Julie, and I won't let that paper be dictated to by anybody. You know what Welburn wants. He wants me to kill a certain story.
Well, you do kill stories sometimes, Traveler.
Yep, I killed one of Pat Mitchell's spicy stories only today. But nobody can tell me what I can't print a story, when I can't print one, and if I think there's news in it, people ought to know.
But won't you even talk to Mr. Welburn about it?
Sure. When he comes down here, I'll make him welcome.
A man like that will never give in and come to see you, Traveler.
Excuse me, but Mr. Brandon W. Welburn is outside.
Mm-hmm. If you're waiting for me to say I told you so, Julie, I ain't going to say it.
Well, it looks like you win the first round, Traveler, but oh, please be careful, won't you?
You run along and stop worrying, Julie. You scram too, Dewey. And tell Mr. Brandon W. Welburn I'll be delighted to see him if he cares to step in.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Give me the accounting department. Hello, Mac. Say, Mac, when are those notes at the Merchants Bank due? Next week, huh? Pretty big, are they? Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mac. No, just wondering. Bye. Come in, Mr. Welburn.
How do you do? I think this is our first meeting, isn't it?
That's right. Sit down.
Thank you. You may have guessed why I'm here.
Well, if I was guessing, I'd guess it is about a story that concerns you and a girl named Rose Montclair. Is that right?
Yes, I'd like you to suppress that story.
Why should I?
It might be worth your while.
Now, look, Mr. Welburn, you're starting off on the wrong foot. If you try to bluff me, that story will be on the front page tonight. Is that clear?
Yes. I admit that it had crossed my mind to try to persuade you, but I know you mean what you say.
Fine. Then let me hear your side of the story, Mr. Welburn.
It isn't a very convincing story, I'm afraid, only it happens to be true.
That's what we're after, the truth.
Then here it is. My wife is an invalid. She can't go out socially with me as we used to do, and so I go alone. But a man of my age can grow very lonely, even in company.
I know.
I like younger people. They help me keep something of my own youth. And sometimes I help younger people to realize the things they want in life. That's how this unfortunate business began. I met Rose Montclair at a party. She was very attractive, I thought.
Yeah, I've got a picture here. Sure would make a nice two-column cut.
When she told me that she'd have to give up her study of dancing for financial reasons, I offered to help.
Just because you like dancing or because you like Rose?
Both. It was flattering to a man of my age to have her tell me that I was the only man who understood her. It made me feel like, well, like a big shot. Is that the term I want?
That's one word for it. Another is sucker. Right. Go ahead, Mr. Welburn.
There isn't much more. Little by little, I came to pay for more than her dancing lessons. There were clothes and, well, trinkets.
Mm-hmm. Any letters?
Why, no.
You're lucky there. Some men write notes beginning my sweetheart and all that. You ought to begin them notes, dear sweetheart and gentlemen of the jury. But tell me one thing, Mr. Welburn. Was there anything in your relationship that, it would hurt your wife if she knew?
I assure you there was nothing really wrong between that girl and myself.
You're sure, are you?
I swear to you that I looked on her as a friend. I thought it was a miracle that such a fine, young, pretty girl could see anything in me. Of course, I've discovered since that she has had many friends to help her, and they've all paid, as she tried to make me pay to keep her quiet.
You wouldn't do business that way, huh?
No, sir. I've been a fool, but I'm not fool enough to start down the long road of blackmail. That's why she threatened to publish her fake story of our friendship.
Mm-hmm. Have you told your wife about this yet?
No.
Then you better go home and tell her before the story breaks. I'm sure she'd rather hear it from you, the way I heard it, than read it in the papers.
You're going to print the story, then?
Look, Mr. Welburn, I'm not your judge, nor that girl's judge either. I'm a newspaper man. If I let people persuade me not to print every story that puts them in a bad light, pretty soon nobody'd believe what they read in the papers. I have to make my own decision as to what's news and what isn't. But I tell you what I will do. I'll hold up the story from tonight's edition anyhow, so you can have time to talk it over with your wife.
You think I should tell her tonight?
As soon as you can get home. If your story is true, she'll know it, won't she, and understand and trust you?
She always has understood wonderfully.
Then give her another chance to understand you now. She deserves that, doesn't she?
Yes. Yes, she does.
Then go tell her. I think you'll feel a lot better.
Yes. Yes. I've been wanting to tell her about it. It's the first thing in my life that I've had to keep secret from her.
Then you're both lucky people, Mr. Welburn. Nothing that I can print will hurt you very much or very long when you have each other to understand. Goodbye, Mr. Welburn.
Goodbye, and thank you for some excellent advice.
Well, I was all set to beard a lion and a caught a lamb.
Traveler.
Hello, Julie. You take down all we said in your notebook?
Well, how'd you know?
I saw your shadow on the ground glass door. What were you doing, protecting me from the wicked man?
Yes, I thought so, but you didn't need any help. Oh, Traveler, I believe him. He isn't any wolf. Why are you going to print that story?
I didn't say I was going to print it. I just told him so he'd tell his wife, before it was printed. So now he'll go home and tell her. And she'll forgive him. Everybody will live happy ever after.
Well, how do you know she'll forgive him?
Oh, I talked to her myself. She's heard the gossip long ago and called me in to tell me that if I ran the story to print her side, too. She wanted the story to say she trusted her husband.
Well, I'll be darned.
Yep, she's just waiting for him to come clean to give him her blessing.
But then you are going to kill the story, aren't you?
Why, no.
What?
Because the story's already dead, Julie. You see, this is the same story that Pat Mitchell was so head up about. I killed it because it is gossip, long before I ever talked to Welburn. Too bad about this picture of Rose Montclair, though. Now it's only good for the wastebasket. And it sure would have made a pretty two-column cut.
Well, it certainly was smart of that old man to confide in the Traveler rather than let himself be drawn into a blackmail plot.
Yes, sir. Dick, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. There's only one other man that I ever knew that handled a similar situation any better than this banker did, and that was my own Grandpa Sned. I remember when I was a boy. Old Grandpa, he was a terror. He happened to get kind of started out, with one of them designing women, just like this woman in the play tonight. And then, of course, he was silly enough to write her a whole lot of letters. And after he got married to Grandma then, I remember after he got married to Grandma, this woman tried to blackmail him. And so she called him up, and she told him that she had a lot of his letters all tied up in a little pink ribbon, and she wanted to know how much he'd be willing to pay for them. And Grandpa says, "Oh, you keep them, sister.
He says, I don't need them. I got carbon copies of all of them. Now, you know, of course, that was in the old days. Today, Grandpa wouldn't be interested in any woman in the world but my own grandma, or a reasonable facsimile. But I remember in those days, though, when I was a boy, I got a hold of one of Grandpa's little red books, his little address books. Do you know the 20th name in that address book was Alice Adams? Just figure it out. The 20th name was Alice Adams, and you know that Grandpa never would spend a nickel on them women. It was just a policy he had, and everybody in town knew it. Of course, he did nice little things for them, you know, to entertain them. He used to take them by the bakery and let them smell the hot bread. But finally, this city woman comes to town, and Grandpa, he just met this woman, and I want to tell you, he just throwed cautions to the wind. Grandpa started taking her to all the hot spots in Van Buren, and spending money right and left. And I told Grandpa, I says, ain't you spending a lot of money on this woman? And Grandpa says, well, sir, you know, he says, all my life I've been saving my money to bury me. But he says, since I met this woman, I've decided to let the county do it. I knew he was headed for trouble. And sure enough, he got, after a while, I remember one night he come in late. Oh, it was long, about 9:30 or 9:45. Grandpa come in the house, and he hadn't any more than got seated. There was a knock on the door, and I went to the door, and there stood this man with a glare in his eye. I says, you want to see somebody? And he saw Grandpa. He said, that's the man I want to see. He walked up to Grandpa, and he put his finger right in Grandpa's face. And he says, you've been running around with Cornelia Van Smoot. And Grandpa says, I sure have. This fella says, I've been following you all day. Grandpa says, if you have, brother, you've been going places. And this man says, I'm her husband. And he says, I've got a camera with me, and I took pictures of you. He says, I got pictures of you two this morning playing croquet at the Hard Scrapple Country Club. He says, this afternoon, I got a picture of you at the Confederate picnic, riding on the merry-go-round. And he says, tonight, I got a picture of you two in Doc Meyer's drugstore drinking double root beer floats. And he says, I want to know what you're going to do about it. And Grandpa says, well, I ain't no piker. I'll take a half a dozen of each. But now, you know, it's just sometimes some people tell me that those things run in the family. And that's what worries me about my cousin, Luther Roundtree, because he's just a young boy. And I've been hearing some things. Come up here, Luther.
Hi.
I know this ain't no place to take this up with you, Luther, but I may not see you after the show. And Luther, I heard that you've been running around with one of them Hollywood girls.
I sure have.
Well, now, has this thing gone very far?
Huh, sir? I took her to a picture show last night and held her hand all through the picture.
You did, huh? Well, all through the picture?
Huh, sir? It's a double feature, too.
Well, now, you're working pretty fast, ain't you, Luther?
Well, I reckon I am, and if I play my cards right, I think next week I can get her to take off her gloves.
Now, listen, didn't you take the girl home?
Huh, sir?
Well, did you go into her house?
Oh, sure.
Well, go ahead, Luther. I want to know. I'm responsible for you, and I think you ought to confide in me. I want to know what you did.
Well, we both sat down on the sofa.
Yeah, go on.
Well, finally she puckered up her lips.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I puckered up mine.
Yeah, Luther, what did you do?
And then we both whistled 4 bars of Amapola. Yeah.
Well, now. Thank you. Now, tonight, in honor of my coming back to the National Broadcasting Company, coming back to the NBC network, I'm going to dedicate my number to it. And in honor of that, I'm going to play It's a Long, Long Trail. That's the number I always play when I come back to the NBC network. Boy,
Well, that's just about all it. I guess I thought that was all of it. That's about all that we got hanging up in the old smokehouse tonight, but I just hope all you men learned a lesson from our little play tonight. If you didn't, I'll tell you what the moral is. The moral is, do right and fear no man, or don't right and fear no woman. Thank you. Good night.
The Bob Burns Show on Tuned to Yesterday from May 20th, 1943 on NBC. Wrapping up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.